So hello, and welcome to the RPG Academy podcast, Twitch channel. My name is Michael, and we are here tonight for another episode of Detention Live. Joining me as always is my co-host, Chris. Chris, say hello to everyone.
Hello, everyone.
And then joining us tonight, we have Joseph C. Wolf, a.k.a. Reaper Wolf. Reaper Wolf is the head writer and lead developer on Dungeon Dwellers Roleplaying. So Joseph, welcome to the show.
Hey guys, thanks for having me.
We are excited to have a chance to chat with you a little bit tonight. So for anyone who may be unfamiliar, myself included, give me the skinny on Dungeon Dwellers Roleplaying. What is that?
It is my love letter to old school gaming through a modern lens.
Okay.
So if you love the perilous dungeon crawl and you like modern mechanics that aren't necessarily Pathfinder or 5e, it's a bridge product between the two. So we're kind of sandwiched in between the two extremes of OSR and say fifth edition. But it's deep, dark, scary dungeon crawls. It's classic fantasy. So it's the game I would have given my 12-year-old self, so many, many years ago.
So again, so it's its own system. Mm-hmm. Is it a
D20? It uses the foundation of say a 3X.
Okay.
But we dump the skill system, and we use a different initiative system. And there's some modern elements worked into it. Like we have a fortune point system, which is an award from game master to player or player to player for doing awesome stuff.
Okay.
So there's lots going on. There's a lot to distinguish it from say either 5e Pathfinder, or OSR.
Okay. And this is an existing thing now people can go check out? Like if they want to go, is there a website? Is there a social? Where should they go look at it?
If you go to ReaperMini.com and you look at the banner for Dungeon Dwellers, our Kickstarter fulfilled. Or rather it finished. And fulfillment is some many months away.
Sure, sure.
I'm still working on it on a number of the books, but we had a very robust miniature and print Kickstarter, and you can go to ReaperMini.com and download our beta, which admittedly is very old, but there's also a couple of adventures and things like that. And all of that will get redone after I'm done with the big old giant box set.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, that's exciting. And again, social media, are you on Blue Sky or TikTok, or I hate to mention even X, but whatever.
I'm on Discord. We have our own Dungeon Dwellers, our channel. And we also have a fairly active community on our forums. Not as active as I would like. But I'm just busy, man. I don't have a ton of time to lurk.
I completely understand that. Well, I'm glad you're here. We'll dig in a little bit more to some things as we go. I do see it does look like we're having an issue with the stream, so I don't know if it's actually going across. But again, we're gonna carry on because we got the audio only and the YouTube versions in the future. But we're gonna jump into what we call extracurricular. It's our first sort of segment here. And basically the concept is we're just going to talk about two or three, maybe four things that we're excited about or into, movies, shows, books, you know, songs, records, albums, whatever, and just talk about them a little bit. And hopefully if it's something we haven't heard of before, we might ask questions like, what is that? If it's something we are also enjoying, we might have some questions there. So Chris, as usual, I'll start with you, buddy. What you been up to?
Relaxing.
That's a bit. Change for you, actually.
It is, yeah. My wife and I are trying to, in a way, slow life down a little bit and just relax, which means we watch a lot of kind of, I don't want to say bad shows on Netflix, but the ones we can sit there and make fun of and talk about. The one we're finishing now is Love is Blind. So you have all these people that can't see each other. They talk to each other. Then they fall in love. They get engaged, then they get to see each other, then they have to live with each other for 4 weeks and then decide if they're going to get married.
Sounds terrible.
It's
not necessarily the show, but the experience.
I think we've watched two, maybe three seasons, and like one out of the 10 couples makes it, maybe two. It's hilarious to watch them argue about things. Last night's argument was, the guy went to go visit his friend's birthday party and was gone for an hour and a half. And she was furious because he was out, quote, all night partying with his buddies. And he was like, I asked you to go. And you said you just wanted to go to bed. By the way, it's a half hour to drive there and a half hour back. So I really was there for a half an hour. So yeah. We went out all night, tearing up the town. And And I just laughed. And it made me laugh because my wife and I, we've married 22 years now. So if I go, let's say I went to your house to hang out, Michael, she'd say, oh, text me when you get there. Maybe 4 hours after I get there, she's going to text me, go, did you get there yet? And I'll be like, oh, yeah, I forgot. And then she just laugh. I probably won't talk with her much until I'm leaving. We might, good night, love you type thing. But if I was going for an hour and a half, she's just going to be like, where were you? Like, I was out hanging out at the bar. She'd be like, oh, did you have fun? Like, that would be the extent of our conversation. So I think it's hilarious to see the opposite.
I mean, there is something to be said for that passion, but I have a marriage, I think it's kind of similar to yours, that my wife and I are just very chill with each other. You know, there's complete trust. We don't have any reason to not trust. So we're just gonna be like, okay, like I'm glad that my wife has friends that I don't necessarily hang out with, and I have hobbies she doesn't necessarily participate in, so that we can have things that we can do, so that when we get together we can talk. Because if I feel like if you do everything together, you have nothing to talk about because you both experience everything together. So I can tell her about my day and she can tell me about her day and that kind of thing. So I enjoy
I
my sort
agree.
of chill marriage as well.
Yeah, I've also been listening to a lot of Critical Role while I play video games, and it's been interesting because I'm impressed with how good they are at describing things, even though they talk over each other a lot. So I've been trying to just catch up on or catch ideas on how to describe things better.
All right. Is there anything else you want to share with us tonight?
Not really. That's all I've been doing. I've been, like I said, just relaxing for once in my life. It's been kind of nice.
Well, again, I'm glad to hear that because I know in lately there's been some stress with your job, so it's nice to hear that you've been able to take a little bit of load off and just enjoy life. So appreciate that. Joseph, you're the guest tonight. What would you like to share with us? What you been up to, buddy?
Well, I am elbows deep in the guts of Dungeon Dwellers, so that pretty much occupies most of my free time. So I'm working on the Game Master's Vault, which is the Game Master's book, and it's intended to be as robust as, you know, the original Dungeon Master's Guide, with all just it's a Bible, you know, it's just full of all kinds of stuff, you know. We've already I turned in the finished work on the Monster Book. So that's being arted up and laid out, and the player's guide was done months ago. So they're incorporating our spell point system. So that's basically been it. It's a full-time job, so that's pretty. I get up at like 3 o'clock in the morning sometimes. Just I got an idea, got to go downstairs. But as far as new stuff goes, are we allowed to push other people's
Of
products?
course.
Cool. This is called Return to Dark Tower. They had a pretty successful Kickstarter in support of a rehash of the giant board game, and this is the RPG complement
Oh,
to
see,
it.
I've seen that game at like some cons recently, the Return of. I've never played the old one or the new one, but I see it and I recognize it when I see it.
See, I grew up with that beautiful Dark Tower game, you know, for all of its eccentricities. You know, Orson Welles doing the really deep, dark voice as he does the commercial for it in the 80s. I begged my mom for a copy, and one day she sprang for it. But yeah, this is the RPG for it, and it's very similar to the board game experience in that they kind of like high level it so that you can fractalize like Fate, and so you can all of a sudden you're controlling an army. Okay, now you dial down, now you're in a dungeon, you know. It's interesting. Your character only consists of a single die from a D4 to a D10. And then the success range depends upon what you're trying to do. And based upon your class determines what those things are. And so it's like books, which is knowledge, versus boots, which is movement, you know. It's very odd. It's built on the foundation of mazes, which is a more dungeon crawly kind of experience. You're basically playing a ninth level character out of the gate in this game, so it's interesting. It's I'm not sold on it, but my pals gave me a really good deal on it in the Game Master screen. So, and I want to see what other people are developing. It's a good idea to go outside of whatever it is you're developing to see what others are doing.
Yeah,
So yeah, it's
absolutely.
interesting. Yeah. Other than that, just looking after my pets and You know, I've got an entire, my basement is full of aquariums. So other than that, that's basically, I get up, take care of my pets. I write all day, take care of my pets, and I go to bed.
Well, I mean, at least you got something like you need, everybody needs a hobby, right? I guess, you know, keeping you busy.
Yeah. I mean, 3D printing, of course, you know, and also, you know, a little miniature type stuff, but man, I gotta find time.
Yeah, that's kind of me. I guess just to kind of transition, I stay so busy. Like we've said before, I'm like the busiest man in podcasting. Like I have so many little projects and just little things that are going on. But the things I guess I'll mention tonight, which I probably have already touched on before, but I've started at this. I work at a school as support staff. I'm not a teacher, but I'm there. I have a responsibility for like the radio station that the school owns and runs in our small town. But I'm also support staff for the school, which is a Montessori school. So we have all the way from kindergarten to high school. We have every grade level, and people know that I'm a gamer, so we've kind of started to incorporate that where I actually go into the classrooms and I teach them games. You know,
Oh,
it's like social
cool.
emotional learning, strategy, probability, math, teamwork, cooperation, you know, good sportsmanship. So we've been mostly playing a lot of Werewolf, which is not my favorite game, but it's an easy game to run with a lot of kids, and they love it. Like they are just absolutely into it. So I'm trying to get more variety of games. And I've actually talked about, like, right now we don't know for sure if I'm going to be there next year. It's a year-to-year contract thing. I want to be there and they want to me to be there, but there are some decisions out of anybody's hands that we don't know about yet. But if I am there next year, we're going to try to incorporate that and make it more like an actual course that I'm teaching where we like, okay, how are these games similar or why are these games different? And like really deep dive into the different types of games that they could learn. I've been teaching some of them how to play D&D and a couple of them how to run D&D. So I basically incorporated my hobby into this school job, which is like my favorite thing in the world to do. So that's been a ton of fun, but it's also a lot of extra added work. I'm trying to, you know, keep myself focused. So it's not just play games with kids. There's always, I got to be an educational element in there as well. Tied to that, sort of, I am going to be doing a how to get started running D&D at my local library. So, because several of the kids have said, I want to play D&D, but I don't know how, and I've started teaching them, I'm trying to teach them how to run the game. So I'm basically going to be doing a presentation on if you're a parent or a caregiver and you have a kid that wants to play D&D, here's how you can get started. Like I have two boys. I've been playing D&D or RPGs with them since they were 5 and 6. They're now 13 and 12, and they're running games for their friends. They have, you know, they have kind of carried on that tradition. They love it like I do. So I want to try to share that with some additional people. So I've been working on a presentation, but like again, I get into my head a whole lot because I'm like, I know I can't teach them everything. But my goal is to teach this to people who literally have no idea. Like I'm thinking like mom, dad, grandpa, grandma, who have no idea what D&D is at all. I have an hour. What can I tell them that will give them the confidence to try? And so I have a presentation that Chris and I have actually done before. I've been a couple of times at like Gen Con and Origins, but I'm having to like not dumb it down, that's the wrong word, but I'm trying to pull it back. Because that is written with the idea that people already know how to play. They've either been a player or maybe they watch Critical Role or other podcasts. So they have some idea how the game works, but where I'm like, this is like how the GM side works. I'm trying to write this as someone who literally does not know what a D20 is and just trying to figure out, okay, what can I do? How can I get you started? And I'm focused a lot on like free stuff because you can get the basic rules for free. There's a starter adventure for free. You can do online dice rollers. So I'm trying to like, okay, here's something you can walk out the door with today for free, and it will be what you need to give it a try at home. So I've been working on that a lot. That's very exciting. And then again, I'll just plug Action 12 Cinema. I actually just today, my shipping labels are done, or not shipping labels, my tracking. Every book that's been mailed out has been delivered, including a couple that got sent back and I had to resend them. I have five people that still haven't given me their address, but other than that, it's 100% completely done and fulfilled. It's in IPR's hands. They have been selling a few copies online. Got a couple conventions that have taken copies to sell, and that's super gratifying for me. I don't, again, I never expected it to take off. I didn't expect it to be like income source for me. But if we keep selling copies, I might eventually break even, which would be great. Because the Kickstarter did well, but it didn't do what I really wanted. It hit the minimums, but it didn't really hit what I needed. So it's been nice to see a few copies going out after that. So that's been my life. And I will, just because that's who I am, I have a secret project that I have started working on that I am very excited about, but it probably will be about a year before I can tell anybody about it. And surprisingly, I haven't told anybody on Discord either, because usually every secret project I talk about, it's all over Discord. No one knows this one yet. So excited about that. And then we're into Catacon, where that's the convention that I run with a ton of help, including from Chris. And we've been doing some stuff on our Discord, organizing, making decisions, getting all that stuff together. And that's always exciting. But that is more than enough for me. So with all that nonsense out of the way, we're going to move into our first improv game. This is 10 things. The idea here is we're going to prompt each other in turn to come up with a list that matches the prompt. Immediacy is better than accuracy. So coming up with a list quickly, even if it doesn't make a lot of sense, is better in terms of the game than actually coming up with a list that makes a lot of sense. Joseph, as the guest, you get the choice. Do you want to go first in terms of prompting Chris or I to starting, or would you like to be prompted first and then give your list first?
I want to prompt.
All right, you can choose myself or Chris, whoever you would like, and then give us the prompt, or them, or
Let's give Chris some limelight here.
All right.
All right.
Okay, Chris, you ready, buddy?
Yep, fire away.
Cool. 10 things you find in the hold of a shipwreck.
Ooh, gold.
One.
Prisoners.
Two.
Hold food.
Three.
Booze.
Four.
Cleaning supplies.
Five.
Fishnet.
Six.
Fishnet stockings.
Seven.
Dirty clothes.
Eight.
Hammocks.
Nine.
And drunken, passed out sailors.
Ten.
Yes, yes.
Was in fact a list of 10 things. All right, so the way that would work, Chris, you will prompt me, and then I will run things up by prompting Joseph.
Let's go with, how about a list of 10 names for pets?
Goober.
One.
Mr. McGooberson.
Two.
Millie.
Three.
Arwen.
Four.
Beta.
Five.
Dr. Sami.
Six.
Bandit.
Seven.
Smokey.
Eight.
Chief.
Nine.
Pupperson.
Ten.
Dead.
Yay.
And like eight Very of those are nice. Pets I have or have had. All right. So I got a tricky one for you, Joseph.
Oh, nice.
Because I don't want to be negative. Like, that's not what I'm trying to go for here. But I know that you're writing a book. You said you're writing like for GM stuff. So I want you to give me 10 bad tips that you would like pieces of advice you would find in your book. But I don't want you to give away the gold. So I want them to be bad, but I don't want it to be negative. Like you're trying to like poop on other games. So just give me like 10 silly suggestions or tips that a GM might find reading a book, if not yours. Does that make sense?
Yes, but not being negative is going to be challenging. Okay, but I'll give it a try. I'll give it a shot.
I mean, you can be negative. I just don't want you like to poop on like a specific game, like that game.
No, I'm not going to poop on a specific game. No.
Perfect. All right, so that goes against what we're doing. 10 GM advice tips.
Okay. Create a semi-intelligent shade of blue character.
One.
Gather up as many resources as possible to hurt other players.
Two.
Two.
Tell other players how to play their characters.
Three.
Three.
Cheat on dice rolls.
Ooh, four.
Four.
Set the game table on fire when your character dies.
Five.
Five.
Let's see here. Dominate the game.
Six.
Six.
Yep.
Kill another player character out of spite.
Seven.
Seven.
Constantly quibble over the most minutiae of things.
Eight.
Eight.
Call the game master's wife ugly.
Nine.
Ooh, nine.
And let's see here. One, a clincher. Of course, kill the game master's cat.
Oh, 10. Ooh, 10. That is, in fact, a list of 10 things that are awful and you should not do. Yes. So thank you very much for playing along. All right. So that moves us into used books. Usually this is the largest section of the show, but not always. But the idea here is that we're going to talk about a previous campaign that one of us have either played in or we were the game master for. And specifically, we're looking for like lessons learned, something we did that worked great and we want to try again, or we want to share that experience with other people, or maybe something we tried that just collapsed and fell apart. And we're like, okay, not doing that again. And we can learn from that to try to change it or not do that in the future. Joseph, you're the guest. Do you have a story you can share with us tonight?
I do, and I call this the Trojan Horse Gambit.
Ooh, okay. Sounds official. And,
yeah, I know, right? Well, I mean, it's something that you got to be careful about. And there's a bunch of different versions of this, but basically what it is the game master uses the player trust and the established whatever it is to basically plant something in the game that turns out to basically be a booby trap of some kind.
Okay.
You know, it appears as something beneficial, but actually ultimately ends up, you know, blowing things up. Now, this can hurt the group. It can hurt the gaming experience. Or if the group is cool with it and the game master is really careful, it can be a lot of fun. So the example I'm going to use is that I ran a fairly lengthy 2-year-long Mystara campaign with 3X, which turned into Pathfinder eventually. And basically, the basics of the game was the players are the custodians of this extremely stupid noble who stands to inherit land in the Grand Duchy of Karamikos. Well, they spent all of the campaign, and I mean 2 solid years of once every 2 weeks of gaming, putting her on the throne, keeping her on the throne, keeping all the bad guys out of the way, making allies, gathering resources, building her castle, only to find out she was a malignant, incredibly intelligent Professor Moriarty bad guy who was playing stupid since she was 12 years old to get exactly what she wanted. And when the bomb dropped, the players were elsewhere. They were on extended little quest, and they came back, and all of their allies had gone cold. Their ship burned down while it was in the harbor when they were supposed to be on it, as there were assassins involved. And in so many words, they got a letter saying, "Don't come back to the keep. The fact that I'm letting you live is my reward to you for being such good lackeys." So it looked like on the surface, the players lost everything. But during the course of the campaign, they made a ton of allies. One of my wife's character, who was another noble, she inherited a small little bit of land. So they went from a well-established, built-up set of resources to, you know, a more raw state. Some groups would have been devastated by this. In fact, we had to end the game 2 hours early when the bomb dropped, just so I could go point for point every element that had ever happened in the campaign. There were 40 or 60 things on this list that pointed out that there were these suspicious things. Mm-hmm. And the players looking back at it, looking at their notes, were just like, it was all there. We saw Professor Moriarty's notebook. We just never thought that she would be this diabolically evil. So it's a cautionary tale, because some players would see this as, you know, I did a shell game on them, you know, bait and switch. But a more mature group, and I had a pretty mature group, took it in stride. But you got to be careful, because you can only get away with one group with this particular gambit once.
Right.
And that's it.
Yeah. I've talked about this similar to this before, but in there's a PC that's secretly the bad guy or working for the bad guy. And I am pretty much universally opposed to that. This is not that. This is different. And I think this would play differently. But my first question, and I'm going to assume in every instance you did exactly what you were supposed to do and did everything exactly right. Whether that's true or not, I'm just going to assume that you did. But the first thing that would come up to me as a GM who's thinking about doing this is, how do I keep the players from figuring it out day one? Because random PC one's like, I want to roll an insight check, or they want to use like a spell, or like they're not even suspicious, but they just do something that could potentially blow the lid off of this years-long plot that I want to do. So my question is, did anything like that happen? And if so, how did you navigate that? Or if it didn't happen, how would you have navigated it?
I played up her vulnerability. So she had basically had a mentality. She portrayed like a 7 or 8 year old girl.
Okay.
And even though she was an adult woman. And so they all were custodians of her. So they all knew that they were pretty much going to run the keep. They pretty much were going to run the fiefdom. She had a medallion. She had a hair clip that was a medallion of proof against detection and also mind shielding. So spells that would influence her like that, if they did get wise, would fail. In fact, a couple times during the game when they actually used a message spell, it didn't reach her because she had it on. And they thought that was a little weird, but any kind of irregularities, they just kind of sort of assumed that things were cool. What I would have done is that I had it set up so that at any time she could have cut bait and run for the hills. And she was making relationships and setting things up with other allies that were off screen that were bad guy allies. And so when Von Hendrix of the Black Eagle Barony all of a sudden deployed a couple hundred humanoids at her keep to kind of look after things, that was a close little union. He initially approached her for a wedding. My players chased him off because they were worried about this guy. So there were dozens of little escape routes that I had kind of worked up in case things popped early, but it just didn't. I got lucky, and I was pretty agile in terms of jumping from one foot to the next.
And so then I guess my other question, and then I want to give Chris a chance to ask some questions as well, is so how long after this reveal did this campaign end? Is it still going on, or was it, did it end soon after that? Because that would be the other thing, is like, that's a great cliffhanger in a movie, but as a player, I want to then have a chance to deal with it.
Absolutely. And I desperately wanted that to happen, but there's one little problem. We moved to California. So it was virtually impossible to kind of get that momentum back. And so we tried a couple times. We mothballed it, and then we started up a different game. This one was fresh, and that way, it wasn't, it didn't have the burden of all the other stuff. We could just jump in and play. But ultimately, there was some friction with the group, and it just didn't last. It didn't survive going digital.
No, I kind of understand. Like, I used to live in the Cincinnati area, and I had a lot of the faculty here at the RPG Academy were local, and we would play together. And then when I moved, like, we still play like one shots and stuff, but we have not been able to maintain a regular game like we had up there since. It's, even though I really enjoy playing digital, for me it only really works for one shots. I have not been able to maintain a campaign that's fully digital. And again, I know that's a me thing, but I'm with you. I've had that same issue. So Chris, so any thoughts on what Joseph did here? Have you ever done anything similar? Thoughts, questions, ideas you want to share?
I have done something similar. I actually did it with Redemption, the Star Wars podcast I've been doing. At the time, we were doing, if you had a certain Patreon level, you could create an NPC with me. And somebody created Zeke, Z3K3, an astromech droid who portrayed himself as kind of fanboying to the crew. Found out that one of the droids on the crew is all about liberating droids from their servitude to people and being sold as objects. So he portrayed that he was there to help the party when really what he was trying to do was recruit the droid off of the ship to start basically a civil war with the droids killing and coming up and revolting. And he would slowly sabotage things and make life more difficult. I handled a little different because I kind of gave the players a little insight to Zeke has an ulterior motive. It'll be revealed later. Just keep that in mind. So that way they weren't, I mean, their characters were blindsided, but the players weren't completely blindsided. They were like, oh, now we understand what you mean by ulterior motives. Then they were able to play into it. It helped us that, because we're doing it as a podcast, I did cut scenes where Zeke was also doing other things off camera or away from the players. So the character, the players knew, I'm sorry, but not the characters. I had players that are good enough that they didn't let that affect their characters' reactions. I don't know if I could pull off the mastermind like you did. I think I would give too many clues away. or my facial expressions would give it away as they would do something and I would smile and they go, what's that smile for? And I'd be like, nothing. You guys are doing great. I think it's a great job that you just did. And they're like, no, that tells me something else is there and we missed it. And then they're going to spend the next three game sessions just replaying that one moment to figure out what they missed.
Which I almost feel like too, like it would be hard for me to sit on that. Like I would want to reveal it earlier, even, you know, just as soon as like the first like big success, like, oh, we got her on the throne. I would reveal it then, not, you know, after the first challenge to the throne is rebuffed or something. I would want to reveal it early. I don't know that I would be able to sit on it that long. Whether I just can't keep a secret or I would start to feel guilty in a way. That's kind of an interesting thought. So my general advice is if you have not the one evil PC, because again, I'm almost universally against that, but just like the idea of like secret motivations or secrets, like, I, you know, characters like I'm secretly the prince, you know, who's lost, or I'm not playing the same species that I'm telling people, I'm a changeling. Like I'm all about, we're just going to tell it. Everybody at the table knows, but the characters don't know, because then you get that everybody's having fun at the same time. So rather than that one player who's like, I get all this extra fun that nobody knows about, everyone gets to go, oh, this is so cool. Like how close can we get to revealing? How can we set up scenarios where we're putting them almost to get caught so that like they're in on the joke basically. But in this particular case, I don't think it would work as well just to say, okay, so I know this is what's going on, but I'm just going to tell you. So actually, I think there is something about maintaining that secret to them that is worth the effort and work that it wouldn't be if it was a player character. Does that make sense, Joseph, the difference there? And you feel free to disagree with me about the player side.
Well, the most important thing wasn't creating the holes in the tapestry. It was more about providing them with tons of fun, lots of opportunities. They got lots of choices they got to make, and it had tons of interactions with her. But ultimately, when the ball dropped, they weren't left with nothing. That was the important thing. Through all their adventures, they had allies, they had resources, they had another keep to fall back on. They had all their gear, you know, they weren't ripped off. So they weren't like just thrown into a dungeon with nothing, which would have been the worst, right? That would have been the horrible.
Oh, yeah.
But they should have had a strong foundation for the rebuilding effort. But the problem is, as we moved to California from Illinois, and it was just too hard to kind of get things going again.
Yeah.
It was a personnel issue for the most part.
So where did the idea for this come? Like, was that intentional from the jump that, hey, that's what this campaign is going to revolve around? Or did it sort of develop organically the first few sessions? And then you're like, hey, this is something I could do. Like, where did this generate from?
Like Athena, it leapt from my skull. The very first time when the player said, one of the players was new to gaming, but she wanted her husband, who had no experience gaming. He had very specific things that he wanted in his character. And so did she and my wife, who's been gaming with me since, you know, we knew each other in college. They all had specific things they wanted. And I just made a list. But then this, I was reading through the Grand Duchy of Karamikos, that beautiful Gazetteer one from the old Mystara TSR line. And I remember reading about the shearing ceremony where, you know, you basically leave home for a year and they cut your cloak and you return and they sew your cloak back up and you've experienced a year of life. And I just happened to tie this in with my wife, who was a noble, but not like the noble. So it just all kind of sort of came together very quickly. And I had it was ready to go from the very first game session. And then we just committed to it and had a lot of fun. But so, with a less experienced group, it would not have worked as well.
Yeah, well, and one thing I would push back there is I wouldn't say it's experience as much as it's like maturity.
Because
you could have people who have no experience playing, but they would not take well to that. And you get people who have, experience, but it's like a maturity of the story that you're telling, which is like, again, I always like to say there's an art and a science to running games. You know, the art or the science is like the mechanics and the rules and knowing how that works. And the art is what you say, when you say it, how you describe things, how you set up the plot lines and that kind of thing. But that's also knowing your table and knowing your players and what's going to land and what's not. Was there ever a time where you thought the jig was up? Like what's the closest that you thought, like, if I had just smiled, it would be all over? Is there anything like that?
There were a few times when a player picked up on the deliberate inconsistency, but you would see it flicker, but the player goes, oh, no, Joseph knows what he's doing, and then just let it slide. And I was like, ugh. And then there were times where I gave him, you know, insight roles or things like that. But I would prefer, this is a personal thing. I don't like players blasting away at the game master with insight roles. I want to know why you are suspicious. Well, I'm a naturally suspicious person. Well, if that's the case, you're the person who serves you drinks, you should be checking it for poison, because that's paranoia. That's not suspicious. But the players were just really cool about it. Like you said, they're not mature. They were mature, not experienced. Mm-hmm. And so they were fiction readers. One guy taught literature. So he liked to watch the tapestry. He just enjoyed the game. But yeah, when we had the bowl session afterwards and they went through that 40 item list, they were like, wow. And it gets brought up occasionally between my wife and I and stuff. But yeah, it was something else. I wouldn't try that again.
No. I mean, it's pretty much a one and done.
You
know, maybe in 20 years, when the legend has faded into the stories have faded into myth or legend, like the Lord of the Rings thing. But I have this sort of theory. I don't have a good name for it. It's not very solidified, but there is a way that a game master, what they choose to say, what they choose not to say, how they describe things, the order that they describe things in, there is some manipulation that can be done there. And I had an interview, I talked to Rich Howard once, he talked about it's like neuro-linguistic something or another. And so it's like, if I'm describing a room, if I describe, whatever I describe last is probably what you will focus on, unless the first thing I describe is so like out there that you don't focus on the other two. Like if you walk into a room and it's on fire, you probably aren't going to listen to where the windows and doors are, right? If you walk into a room and I'm like, okay, there's two doors over there, there's two windows over here, and it's on fire, you're going to focus, okay, it's on fire, we have to get out, and then you will like link back to what I told you about the doors and windows. So I don't have like a thesis behind it yet, but I think there is something to game mastering where you can manipulate on purpose your players, not to get you or gotcha. That's one of my absolute worst things, I think, is when a GM intentionally pulls a gotcha. And again, I don't think
gotcha game master.
Yeah. I hate that. But sometimes to sell that illusion to make the game more fun, it's like being a magician. You know, I don't actually take this ball and move it to the fifth dimension. It's a trick. But if I do it well, you're still going to clap when I reproduce the ball from my other hand, right? And I think there's something to that about game mastering. There's a certain level you get to, either it's an intellectual decision or just an instinctual thing some of us can do from, you know, reading, being, again, media literate, where we will intentionally be dishonest to our players.
Obfuscate.
To make them go down a certain path to allow us to pull that rabbit out of the hat later. And I think as long as the intention is just, and it's not a gotcha, I think most game players will accept that later and go, okay, you tricked me, but it was a trick, like a magic trick. It wasn't like a April Fool's joke kind of cruel thing, if that makes sense. I don't know.
The juice has to be worth the squeeze, and you can't be punishing about it. You can't sit there and talk crap about it. You can't make the players feel foolish. So you have to be very cautious in terms of how you behave. Because as you said, it's very manipulative. Game masters are. You search the room. You roll the dice. You don't find the trap. The game master looks the player right in the eye and goes, "You didn't find a trap."
Yep. No traps.
There's no traps to be found here.
I got you. All right, Chris, again, I wanted you to have a chance there to start getting any questions, comments, thoughts, anything you have for Joseph about this topic?
I really think I think we've all, I think you've hit on it a little bit too, is that's the type of game that's very specific to your players. And as that's one of the skills of a GM is understanding your players. I'm the type of person who would have loved that game. I've said it before, one of my favorite characters is Palpatine. Here's a genius, evil genius that laid siege to his own planet. How do you obfuscate who you are better than that? To me, you did something similar to that with this character of pretending like she's not as intelligent as she is, meanwhile silently manipulating everything behind the scenes. I would have been the guy that's like, give me that, give me those clues. Why did I not see this? Why did I not see that? And then the next time we played, I'd be like, all right, I'm going to be the new king. Here's how it's going to work. And as a player, I would have figured out a way I could have thrown her off the throne and I get to be the king. It would have not a challenge to me, but I would have been excited to jump into that. It would have actually kind of reinvigorated me in a way of getting into that character, into that game, and into that story. I know other players that I've played with where I've tried similar things and they just go, nope, I don't like that. That wasn't fun. I was like, but I gave you the clues, and like, I know, but I don't like that. I want to know who the bad guy is at all times. I like knowing who the true evil is. I want to know that there's Sauron, there's all the orcs. I don't want to think about somebody that's going to turn on me in the back. So I definitely think you have to know your players and know your limits. Like I said, I don't know if I could pull that off that well because of I don't know if my facial expressions could hide that. I'm the GM though. If I say you don't find a trap, you can read it on my face like, oh, there's a trap.
You didn't find it.
Yeah, we just didn't
Well,
find it.
to your cohort's comment about the Trojan horse within the game group, I've actually been at ground zero, the victim of a Middle-earth game gone horribly wrong with one of the players. The brother of the game master, who never played with us, came in with a werewolf and led us right into the jaws of Northern Mirkwood. Orcs, trolls, the werewolf took all of our crap, threw us in the dungeon. It was such a bad situation that we revolted, and the game master had to relent and allowed us to escape and get our shit back. Oh, I'm sorry, Sor.
It's okay.
But he had to basically re he had to recant because we were in high school. We didn't take it well.
And that's been my experience. I've been in a few games, one of which was the brother of the game master was also that guy. I think because they have time to conspire in between games is where that comes from.
They're under the same roof.
And I mean, and I've actually talked to people who've said they've had a similar thing and it worked great and they loved it. Like it was when the reveal happened, everyone was like, oh, similar to what you said. They're like, these were the clues. This is what you missed. And like, they were like excited about it. I have just never had anything but bad experiences. And so I'm not going to say no one has had a good experience. I've never had a good experience and I won't run it. Again, you're never going to play in my game where you have to worry about that because that's not something I enjoy doing. But it could also be that I'm just not good at doing it and I know it will go poorly. Just like I'm never going to try to make beef Wellington. Like that's just not in my wheelhouse. I'm not going to try it. It would be awful and probably give you a stomach bug, right? But I'll cook you a good steak, right? So I can run a game that's a good steak, can be great. You're going to love it. But beef Wellington is just not something I'm going to serve. As I don't know, I must be hungry. I'm having a lot of food metaphors tonight. My other question though for you, and this is probably my thing I'm most interested in, is how and when did you decide to do the reveal? Because I'm sure there were other points, like other wins that she had that could have been the time that you revealed. So why did you do what you did?
The player characters had just leveled to 7 and a lot of their new class features unlocked. I was using a fairly robust feat system, so they got an influx of lots of cool stuff, you know. They had just come back from an adventure trying to find somebody on the island, kind of like an Island of Dread scenario. And so they had just gotten back to the mainland from this ocean journey, and they got back to the mainland and there was the letter waiting for them. And so they were really far away from the keep, so it would take a prolonged period of time to just get there. So they were far enough away so that they were kind of insulated from harm. Of course, there were assassins that, you know, burnt the ship down in the harbor, and they were supposed to be on it, but so they escaped harm that way. But they had previously made an ally of this poor widow whose husband backed the wrong guy in the last political thing. And so she lost everything. So when my wife showed her kindness, she basically brought her into the household and put her in the will, kind of a thing. And so then my wife had a keep, a small little moat house somewhere. So they were in a position to take steps, you know, to rebuild and oust the bad guy. So it would, the time was right. I wasn't sure at what point, but I knew the conditions. I knew what conditions I would want them. And just the players themselves were kind of, you know, they were kind of at the point where something big, you know, they were ready for something big. So nice. That's basically it.
So if somebody is thinking about doing something similar, what's like one piece of advice? I know we've already kind of touched on, like, you know, make sure it's a, you have a table that it would make sense and those types of things. But is there one tangible piece of advice you give someone who's thinking about doing something similar?
Break the big plot into little chunks and have an escape route, not for the bad guy, but for you as the game master to like go, okay, well, this isn't working anymore. I need to have something else in place. And so I had a situation where at any point she could have been grabbed. And then it turned out she is just an idiot. And so the bad guys who have been sending in agents and stuff were the ones behind it all along. So it's just a matter of kind of, and don't be a jerk about it. You know, like my buddy who ran that MERP game, that Middle Earth role play game, he and his brother were not particularly kind to us. Mm-hmm. And you know, you're in high school, you're a little thin skinned.
Yeah.
It did not go over well. That MERP campaign went on hiatus for 3 months. And then when we came back, we were like, here's our list of conditions before we'll play again.
Yeah.
We get our crap back. We managed to make an escape. I don't care if Radagast the Brown shows up and saves us. I don't care. We need to get out of the situation.
Yeah. Retconning is a thing for a reason.
Yeah.
And again, for all the crossover that running a game is like writing a story, they are very different. And one, because a game is at best a rough draft of a story. You don't buy a novel that was not rewritten and edited. So sometimes you're like, you know what? I think I'm going to change that. And then the audience will never know. But in a game, the audience was there the whole time. So, but it's just part of the deal. Sometimes you're retcon. All right, Chris, anything final from you before we wrap this up?
No, I applaud you for making that work. Yeah. Zeke was much more minor than that. He didn't take over the galaxy. He didn't even really take over a ship. He didn't really do much other than annoy the group. So I think I always applaud GMs when you can do something that I find something I would have found very entertaining to do and something that would have been new, especially if they can surprise me, because everybody has a evil dragon in a lair somewhere that the players are going to go fight eventually. But to realize the evil dragon was standing next to you the whole time is a different story.
To me, one of the most nice things that came out of that entire thing is, even though we didn't get to play together anymore, the husband who had never played before is now a very vigorous game master. He's running a lot of different things. And so, I mean, that the seed was planted. I was very happy about that.
Yeah. Nice. Just going to the sports analogy a little bit, it's like football coaching trees. Like, just how many coaches did like a head coach produce, and like how many DMs did a GM produce, or GM? I just think that's, like I always say, the only measuring stick we have for GMs is, did everybody have fun? If we have another one, it's, did they develop the next generation of game masters or whatever? Because I think that's, again, keeping this hobby alive and growing. You can't do it without GMs. We have players. We don't have the GMs for it. So if you've encouraged people to do that, then you're doing the good work, sir. All right. So we're going to wrap that up. We're going to move into our second improv game. This is Where Have My Fingers Been? This is a little puppeteer game where we're going to take turns prompting each other again to create a short scene that involves two characters, maybe three if you want to get froggy. And then we're going to just kind of pantomime and act it out. It's supposed to have a beginning, middle, and an end. I usually leave at least one of those out because I think it's funny. So Joseph, you are the guest. Would you like to go first in terms of prompting Chris or I for a scene, or would you like to be prompted for your scene first?
Let me hit me. Let's see what happens.
All right, Chris, do you have something, or do you want me to do it?
Go ahead.
All right. So the first thing you have to do, we are contractually obligated to sing the song. New York Tater will revolt if we don't. So if you don't mind, please sing the song.
And that's the where have my fingers been? Where have my fingers been?
Yes. So your fingers are, one of them is have a slow dawning realization that they have been manipulated by someone for a very long time, and the other one just doesn't see it.
Okay. Oh, man. You're never gonna believe this. What, man? What, are you okay? No, you're never gonna believe this. She took me for everything I had, man. What? Cindy? No, Marjorie. Sure, it wasn't Cindy? No, I'm pretty sure it was Marjorie. I mean, it was my bank account and it was my everything, man. She even took my car. Your car? Well, it was a 2008 Mazda. It was no big deal. Dude, you're not, listen. This is more serious. She took me for everything. Well, I don't know, man. Marjorie wasn't that great. Maybe you should just see this as a good thing. Everything. And see.
That's where your fingers have been. Yay.
Hey.
All right. So
that's where my fingers have been.
You will now prompt Chris. It's Chris, you are obligated to sing the song, please.
All right. Where have my fingers been? I said, where have my fingers been?
Each of your fingers is a dragon, and they're going to be fighting over and squabbling over a recently acquired hoard.
It's mine. No, I don't think so. But what do you mean you don't think so? I got it. I gathered it. I dug the hole. I put it in there. Yeah, but I'm taller. But I'm better looking. I'm smarter, but I smell better. I can spell better than you can. What does that have to do with managing a hoard? Ledgers, bookkeeping. I mean, it's a lot of work. Wait, what? Bookkeeping? Yeah. You got to keep track of where all the hoard is. You don't want to lose anything. You got magic items in here, buddy. You got to make sure you know where they are. What? They're right there. I know they're right there right now. But later, what happens if one of them leaves? How do you know it's gone? Because it wouldn't be there. All right, why don't you just give it to me because I'm smarter and you're going to lose something. Lose what? Nothing. Look over there. Oh. And there, it's where my fingers are back.
Fantastic. I just, the mundanity of running a hoard. Now, it's not every dragon's built for it.
Yeah.
All right, here we go. Where have my fingers been? I said, where have my fingers been?
You are getting ready to go to dinner, and you can't decide who's driving.
All right. Hey, babe, are you ready? Just a second. Just wrapping up. So, you know, I had a long day. Do you mind driving tonight? I was actually thinking about getting a drink. So could you drive? You know, I don't really like your friends. How about we just order DoorDash? Yep. And that's where my fingers have been.
That took a quick turn.
Yeah, exactly. I don't like people. All right. So that moves us into our last segment here. We do have a couple people that are hanging out with us, so we thank you for doing that. If you have any questions that you would like to ask any or all of the group, that now's your chance to put it into chat. Makes sense if they're gaming related, but you know, you do you. But we reserve the right to not answer a question if we don't feel it's something we want to talk about. There's a little bit of a delay between us and the stream, so while we have a couple seconds, we're going to go around the horn. Everybody, again, quickly plug where people can find us, any projects, that kind of thing. Joseph, again, you're the guest tonight. You've done a wonderful job. Remind people again who you are, what you're working on, and where they can get a hold of it.
I am Joseph Wolf, also known as Reaper Wolf. I am Reaper Miniatures head writer and lead developer on the Dungeon Dwellers role-playing game. And you can find us on ReaperMini.com, our forums, and also our Discord servers.
Fantastic. Chris?
Mostly Discord. I kind of gave up on most other social media because I just don't go there enough to make it worth anybody's time. So I do some stuff on Discord. You can find me here the Thursdays after we're doing this show doing Dragonlance, and the Tuesday before we do this show doing Smuggler's Blues, which is the continuation of the Redemption story. You see me here on Wednesdays.
All right,
every other Wednesday.
So again, I'm Michael. I'm still on a few social places at the RPG Academy, but really our Discord is the place I'm most active. I do still post on Facebook. I recently started a TikTok where I'm just giving like basically GM advice. The things you've heard me say 1,000 times, if you listen to the show, I'm now putting into bite-sized chunks on TikTok. But I'm having fun. I have a small following that's starting to grow, which is exciting. Action 12 Cinema, of course, you can find that at Indie Press Revolution or my own website. Certain friendly local game stores have it. Any of them can order it. So if you do want to buy a physical copy, save yourself shipping, go to a game store and ask if they can get a copy through IPR, and then you can buy it from them, save yourself the shipping. Or it's, there's also PDF copies available in multiple places. I think that's basically it for me. A Catacon in November, that's still a long way off. I'm going to be at Origins. I'm going to be at Gen Con. I'm going to be at Lexicon. I'm going to be at Sin City Con. So if you're any of those, find me and say hi. And if you want to email the show about anything, it's be therpgacademy@gmail.com. All right. So no questions have come in yet. So again, still an open call. If you're out there watching or listening, if you'd like to submit a question, please do. But while we wait, we have one question that we ask everybody, Joseph. So I'll go ahead and ask that to you now. Imagine you were being turned into an action figure. I don't mean you're actually magically being polymorphed into one, but they're like, hey, we're going to make an action figure out of Reaper Wolf. What are the three accessories that would come in your package?
I want like a really cool umbrella, an umbrella gadget of some kind. I would like a cool backpack for my third item, which is a little Yoda-like creature to park in the back of, in the backpack.
Now, is that going to be a pet, like one of your turtles, or is it like an alien
creature? I kind of want something that's kind of monkey-like, but with reptilian traits, but with extra limbs.
Oh, okay. All right. So, yeah. All right. I can see how that would be handy. All right. So I get it. Yeah. See. All right. So no questions come in. So we'll wrap it up there. Thank you, everybody who is watching now. Thank you, everyone who's listening or watching in the future. We do the show every other week on Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern. We try to bring on guests when we can. Sometimes we do special episodes. Last time we did a special draft with our friends Kevin Stacy from Wanderer's Haven and Lee Wanika from Tabletop Journeys. We're going to be releasing that audio soon. In fact, it may already be out before this comes out. But if it is still out, you get to vote on that draft, who you think put together the best collection of action adventure TV show vehicles from the 70s, 80s, and 90s. Whoever gets the most votes wins, and that person will become draft master for our next draft in the future. I've already got a few ideas I'm working on in case I win, because I think I crushed it, to be honest with you. I think I feel like I crushed that one. But you get to decide, not me. So we're going to roll. Thank you all. And just remember, if you're having fun,
you're doing it right.
Thanks, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.